Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On March 17, 2008, the court heard oral argument in Rothbury v. Gillespie County. The court was asked to consider whether the Sixth Amendment right to counsel attaches to defendants brought before a magistrate and jailed pending posting a bond if prosecutors were not involved in the arrest or court appearance. In another Sixth Amendment case, on March 26, 2008, the court heard oral argument in Indiana v. Edwards. The court was asked to consider whether the Sixth Amendment grants a defendant found competent to stand trial the right to represent himself in a criminal proceeding. Tom Getty of Bingham Consulting Group and up counsel to Bingham McCutcheon discusses these two cases. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Attorney Getty.
This is Tom Getty. In March, the Supreme Court took argument in two Sixth Amendment cases relating to the appointment of counsel, asking when and who. That is, one case goes to when the right attaches, and the other goes to the question of self-representation. The first of the two cases is Rothbury against Gillespie County, Texas. In this case, Walter Rothbury was arrested on charges of being a felon in possession of a firearm and brought before a magistrate judge in a hearing that Texas terms a magistration, provided for in the State Code of Criminal Procedure, Article 15.17. The magistrate judge informed Rothbury of the accusation against him, found probable cause that he had committed the offense based on a police officer's affidavit, and committed him to jail pending trial or the posting of bail. The judge informed Rothbury of his right to have counsel appointed, and Rothbury requested counsel. However, he was told by the judge that if he wanted to proceed with the hearing and have his bail set, he would have to waive his right to an attorney for purposes of the hearing, or else wait in jail until an attorney was appointed. Apparently, Rothbury agreed to waive his right to counsel so that magistrate could set bail. While out on bail, Rothbury requested counsel again, but since the policy there was not to appoint counsel until a court appearance is ordered following the filing of an information or an indictment, he went without counsel until the grand jury returned an indictment. In the meantime, he went back to jail for failing to meet bail, which had been increased upon his indictment. Eventually, an attorney was appointed, got the bail reduced, and Rothbury released after 3 weeks in jail. The attorney obtained records that showed that Rothbury did not have a felony conviction and then succeeded in having the charges dropped. Rothbury brought this action for civil damages under Section 1983 for a violation of his Sixth Amendment right of counsel immediately following his magistration hearing, where counsel could have established his innocence and avoided the bond and consequent imprisonment. The key issue in the civil case was whether Rothbury's initial appearance before the magistrate constituted the initiation of adversary judicial proceedings and therefore the trigger for his right to counsel. The Fifth Circuit answered this question in the negative and observed that in the 1972 decision of Kirby v. Illinois, the Supreme Court held that the Sixth Amendment right to counsel attaches only once adversary judicial proceedings have been initiated, quote, whether by way of formal charge, preliminary hearing, indictment, information, or arraignment, close quote, and therefore no right attached at Rothbury's magistration hearing. Rothbury's argument was that the magistration marked the commencement of adversary judicial proceedings, citing Brewer v. Williams and Michigan v. Jackson, cases following Kirby by a few years, and cases essentially holding that it is when the defendant is informed of the accusation against him and committed to custody that the initiation of adversary judicial proceedings is signaled. Gillespie County counter-argued that the right to counsel did not attach because there was no commitment to prosecute at the time of Rothbury's pre-indictment magistration, and that neither Brewer nor Jackson requires that the right to counsel attach at an Article 15.17 appearance following warrantless arrest. This argument rests upon the notion that the state of Texas had not yet committed to prosecute Rothbury at magistration, and that because the Sixth Amendment right is designed to protect the defendant's interest in receiving a fair trial, where the accused is confronted by his adversary, the prosecutor, it is not intended to protect against any substantial deprivation of liberty before trial, where before the prosecutor has even obtained an indictment or information. At oral argument, the court spent some time trying to understand what the unique Texas magistration hearing was and how it fit in before the subsequent examining trial. One of the first questions of argument came from Chief Justice Roberts, who asked counsel for Rothbury, quote, how can there be an adversary proceeding when there's no other adversary on the field. The prosecution's not present. They don't even know anything about this, close quote. Counsel for Rothgray stipulated it is not the adversary nature of the hearing that is determinative under Jackson. Rather, Jackson held that the initial appearance itself, regardless of whether the prosecutor is present or involved, marks the commencement of a prosecution. But counsel faced questions from Justices Ginsburg and Alito, pressing the question of just when in this unique Texas ministerial hearing. At the beginning of it? The middle? The end? Counsel stated upon magistration, which he did not seem to satisfy the justices. Ultimately, the argument got back to Rothgray's point that the right to counsel attaches either sometime before the indictment or after the magistrate informs the defendant officially of the accusation against him and of his rights as a criminal defendant, and thus that this constitutes a critical phase of the prosecution. Rothgray relied on Estelle versus Smith for the proposition that counsel's assistance is needed not only to conduct and prepare for critical stages, but also to assist the defendant in deciding whether to undergo them. Justice Scalia suggested that the court could formulate a rule that the right does not attach until there is a significant stage of the prosecution, an essential part of the prosecution, and that the mere fact that a person has been brought to the courthouse and made bail and let go does not require counsel to be provided. Next, counsel for Gillespie County faced questions as to how an individual in Texas can be brought into court, held in jail for 3 weeks without charge, and no right to counsel applies. Counsel argued that perhaps other Fourth Amendment rights, those under Gerstein versus Pugh, and Sixth Amendment speedy trial rights might be implicated, but not the right to counsel. Counsel did agree that if an examining trial were set within a certain period after the magistration, Texas would be obliged to provide counsel to a defendant. The county's argument reflected the court's earlier discussion in United States versus Gouveia about what interests are protected, namely that the Fourth Amendment and Sixth Amendment speedy trial precedents go to key liberty interests. The right to counsel is not specifically a liberty interest protection, but as argued by Gillespie County, something that protects your right to a fair trial and thus needed for critical stages. The argument ended with Rothgray's counsel acknowledging that a Gerstein probable cause determination is not a critical stage of the prosecution, but arguing that this hearing involved an initial appearance that served a specific substantive purpose, informing the accused that he is now a criminal defendant and that this is the accusation against him and these are his rights as a defendant in a criminal proceeding. Still, in order for Rothgray to prevail, the Supreme Court is going to have to hold that the Sixth Amendment requires that counsel be appointed, as amici states supporting the county put it, at some indeterminate time after his probable cause hearing, for an indeterminate purpose, irrespective of any critical stages or further proceedings in the case. Another Sixth Amendment case argued before the court in March is Indiana against Edwards, where the court granted certiorari on the question of whether a state may adopt a higher standard for measuring competency to represent oneself at trial than for measuring competency to stand trial. Central to the issue is whether any limitation on the Sixth Amendment right of self-representation in Ferretta versus California, based on the person's ability, was foreclosed in Ferretta itself and in the 1993 case of Godinez versus Moran. Indiana urges separate tests for competency to stand trial and for waiving counsel, and is generally supported by the United States Solicitor General. It is interesting that the court granted certiorari in the case, and perhaps hints that the court is willing to reconsider its precedence here. Edwards was charged with criminal recklessness, aggravated battery, and attempted murder. Ultimately, after two trials, he was convicted. But before trial, on certain of the charges, he underwent four competency hearings, two commitments to the state mental health department, and extensive therapy and treatment with psychotropic drugs. 5 years later, Edwards regained sufficient mental competency to stand trial. Before and throughout the second trial, Edwards formally petitioned the court to proceed pro se, but the judge denied the motion. The judge, while finding Edwards mentally competent to stand trial and to assist counsel under Dusky versus United States, he found that he was incapable of self-representation due to delusions, schizophrenia, communication troubles, and related problems with focus. The Indiana Court of Appeals reversed the conviction, concluding that Godinez required that respondent be allowed to represent himself at trial. The Indiana Supreme Court followed suit and noted that Ferretta and Godinez had not been overruled and that the standard for competency to represent oneself can be nothing more than competency to stand trial. Indiana argues that the Sixth Amendment should permit state trial courts to impose a higher standard of competency for self-representation than for simply standing trial, namely where the defendant cannot communicate coherently with the court or a jury. This rule, according to Indiana, fits Sixth Amendment doctrine, which allows some balancing of interests when defendants attempt self-representation. Edwards, in turn, appeals to the core holdings and reasoning in Ferretta and Godinez, going to the fundamental choice being left to the defendant. Every competent defendant, Edwards says, has a right to choose self-representation, which the states are bound to respect. At oral argument, counsel for Indiana faced considerable questioning from the justices about the test that should apply here. Counsel for Indiana suggested it should be within the state's authority to override the self-representation right when the defendant cannot communicate coherently with the court or jury. Justice Scalia openly suggested this was a vague test, but counsel tied it back to Dusky with its standard of a reasonable level of understanding and a reasonable level of ability to assist the lawyer. The court explored questions of trial efficiency and whether the proposed test would provide an incentive for judges always to deny self-representation in close cases. Indiana argued that if the courts cannot balance the right with the circumstances before them, and Ferretta and Godinez currently preclude that balancing, then there is a high risk of the trial descending into a farce before it is too late. The United States Solicitor General weighed in as well, suggesting the focus should be on whether the state has a sufficient interest that would be served by denying self-representation. Justice Scalia asked whether a separate test for self-representation might result in a less rigorous test for being able to be tried, and that there might be some value in linking the two, so that, as he put it, quote, the court knows that if he finds the individual capable of being tried, he may have to begin a trial with this individual representing himself, close quote. The Solicitor General responded that the tests serve different purposes. The competency threshold goes to whether the defendant has the minimal degree of rational understanding to assist his counsel and to understand what is happening, whereas the knowing and intelligent waiver of counsel is to ensure that he has to understand what he is doing. Counsel for Edwards faced questions as to the state's interest in ensuring a credible process. Counsel argued, under the Sixth Amendment, a trial is fair if the defendant has the choice whether to pursue a certain right, and thus a higher standard for competency for waiving counsel does not serve fairness. The argument was made that the logic of the Sixth Amendment does not encompass the ability of the trial court to second guess or presume that the self-representation would be bad for the judicial process. If a defendant is dusky competent, the argument goes, it is not right to suggest that the defendant's lack of courtroom abilities should bar the Sixth Amendment right. And, Edwards' counsel continued, the ability of the court to exclude disruptive behavior under Illinois versus Allen is sufficient to protect the process. Justice Kennedy did not accord much weight to this reasoning, and Justice Souter made the point that an incoherent defendant representing himself but speaking total nonsense nonetheless may be civil and polite and not disruptive as in Allen. In sum, the outcome of Rothbury and Edwards is not perfectly clear, but both cases demonstrate that the contours of the Sixth Amendment rights to appointed counsel and self-representation are up for redrawing. In both cases, the ability of the state courts to ensure the integrity of their efficient and orderly processes against the pressure of Sixth Amendment rights is tested, and they undoubtedly are not the end of the story.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.